KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I'm sitting across from a man who we haven't heard from for a while, yeah. Our old friend Jason Segel, who's back on AMC with Dispatches from Elsewhere, which is his take on a really interesting documentary called The Institute from, I guess, almost 10 years ago now.
Yeah, that's right.
First of all, Jason, it's a thrill to have you back.
Yeah, it's really nice to see you, man.
And again, I was saying to you, this is really, the doc is a taking off point because the kernel of what I feel like the doc is, which is what the show is, takes place in the last 10 minutes of the documentary, including the one of the lines Mike says, yeah, we just thought at some point it might be a good idea to punish the players, which is a kind of recurrent thing in the show too, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's very challenging. You know, funny enough, it reminds me a lot of Infinite Jest by David Foster Wallace, which is a punishing book to read in a way because
we talked about it the last time you were here.
Yes, he's constantly challenging you.
And himself.
Yes. How much do you want this? How much do I want this? How much do we want to get to know each other? And how hard are we willing to work for it? And when I saw the documentary, which is also based, I should say, on a real art experience.
It's kind of a performance installation, which I, when I saw the film, I thought was based on the Fincher film, The Game.
Yeah, no, this was its own thing. It was like the beginnings of immersive theater, maybe you'd call it. Also, sort of a social experiment because this thing lasted 2 years. This was not a one-night event. You and I talked, but it reminded me of the exact opposite of Fight Club, of people who had this intense feeling that I think we all do, that there should be more and that things can be better. And as opposed to beating each other up, it's like art as an act of defiance.
But also what Fight Club was about, and again, I say The Game because I think The Game is the 180 of Fight Club.
Yeah.
What Fight Club was about was the beginnings of the kind of solipsism that is now basically taking over the society,
yes,
where loneliness now comes because you isolate yourself because you've chosen to rather than being forced upon you.
Yes.
And I thought that documentary at its heart was really about this need to create a society and to explain things for ourselves in the place of religion, which I think are both two admirable things to do. And I think the show's about that as well, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to get too grandiose, but it does touch on spiritual concepts of community. If there is a greater point, what is it? How should we be using our time? This limited time we have together, how should we use it? I think that is explored in the show. Wrapped up, what they did brilliantly, I think, in creating this game is wrapped up in a Willy Wonka-style sense of fun and adventure. So you never feel like you're being preached to. You actually feel like you're part of it, that you are playing a game that is helping to inform these questions.
Yeah, but also, there's a sense of it being a game, which I'm lucky enough to have seen the first 8 episodes of the show. Because there's a shift in tone that really starts in visual terms in episode 3. And I won't give too much away, but people should see it. Just because if you're paying attention, it really shifts. But I also love that you do something that the doc doesn't do, which is the show starts off with Richard E. Grant sitting in dead silence for about 25 seconds.
Yeah.
So it's like...
Yeah, it was bold.
Talk about that moment.
For me, if this makes any sense, it was the grown-up version of the nudity in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, where I think that to some extent, we know we are so inundated with content that we really know all the moves. This is how I felt when I made Forgetting Sarah Marshall. I know how a romantic comedy goes. The guy on the poster is going to end up with the girl on the poster, and there's going to be some variation in theme to make that happen. And so when I was writing that, I thought, well, how do I knock people out of their comfort zone? And at 25 years old, I was like, I'm going to do full frontal nudity in scene one.
And a Dracula musical to end it with.
Yeah.
A Dracula puppet musical to end it with.
Yes, that's right. And I thought when I was starting this, we are in a moment of so much content, of so much variation on a theme.
And so much inundation. There's so much velocity to content now.
Yes, so fast.
It's assaultive.
And I thought, what if I make us all slow down and say, I have no idea what's going to happen in this show. And there's all sorts of, you've seen the episodes, there's all sorts of unconventional storytelling throughout it to sort of jolt you out of the malaise of, I've seen this before. There's this great Shepherd Fairey painting of a woman screaming with her mouth open, and at the bottom it says, "Wake up." And I had that as the cover of the Bible for the show. It's a mission statement for the show. Like, let's use art to jolt us out of this sort of malaise that we're in.
But the show, if it's about jeopardy at all, it's about the jeopardy of being too self-absorbed.
Yeah.
And which is a danger.
Yeah, sure.
It's really a danger. And you give that a kind of a dramatic import here. That's the shock of it, is that, well, wait a second. It is about danger, but the dangers of taking loneliness as a given rather than fighting against it.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of stories being told about extraordinary people and superheroes and people who find out that they're destined for greatness. And that's not how most of us are living, you know? Like, most of us are coming to terms with that we are just like everybody else. And there is a version of that that is lonely, and there is a version of that that is so freeing and communal. Like, oh, we're all in this together. I don't need to be the one who is so different from everybody. What if the beauty is in the union between all of us?
I guess I have to say, too, that I'm amused by so many things, like the current line of, I'm going to give you 20 minutes of your life back.
Yeah.
Which is the joke that people make all the time, but for this to be said so often. And I guess what I'd ask you, too, is casting Richard E. Grant.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's doing like the version of the villain from Hudson Hawk 25 years later.
Well, that part is really interesting because it's
in the dock,
yeah.
But it's so low key and flat. It's almost like a parody.
Yeah, I wanted that character. He is like Puck or something from Shakespeare. He is this mysterious meta figure that's guiding us through the whole story, and it requires this gravitas, but also this sort of subversive sense of humor
and this playfulness.
Yes, he has all of it. I mean, he's one of my idols. Going back to Withnail and I.
When you think of Richard E. Grant, you think about this guy who almost self-asphyxiates by talking so much, and to give him these speeches, to have him sit still for 20 seconds, and then this 2-minute-long speech after that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine somebody better to deliver some of these monologues because they are filled with gravitas, but also, if you listen to them, they're also a little weird, and they're off.
They're a little weird.
Yeah, and so you really needed somebody who could project this, like, sense of authority. He's like a father figure, especially to my character. I look up to him. And then to find out maybe he's a villain, maybe he's not. I don't know. He's like Willy Wonka in a way.
By the way, we're not talking about Willy Wonka. We're talking about Dispatches from Elsewhere. It's the treatment. Our guest is our old friend Jason Segula, shows on AMC. But talk about where this came from, because this is an unusual take on a film that's about an unusual subject.
Yeah. I have always turned to writing when it was time for me to make something. It's just, I like creating something from scratch, like bringing it from idea land all the way to when you can hold it. It has always felt like magic to me. And so I was trying to figure out what to write about after How I Met Your Mother ended, which I was on for a decade. And I had done a bunch of romantic comedies. And at 33, 34 years old, when I was getting ready to write again, I looked at my life and I thought, I'm not the same person who wrote Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Like, a lot has happened since then, and I have been stretching that moment for about a decade, and it's time to do an artistic, personal, life check-in. Who am I now? It was right as I was prepping for a movie called End of the Tour, where I played David Foster Wallace, and so I was reading Infinite Jest, and I just, for the first time in a really long time, I didn't know what to write about. And that was a pretty scary feeling because I've always turned to writing when I needed anything. And I saw this documentary. And to me, what rang through about it is this question of who am I? I have sort of bought into that I am all the boxes I've checked. And I've done all the things that I've been told to do. And I was told they were going to make me feel a certain way. And now at 34 years old, I'm not feeling this way that, like, the promise. And I wanted to write about that, about maybe we've put our eggs in the wrong basket. Maybe somewhere we lost sight of that this is all about, I mean, we're in it right now. connecting to one another. And it's really, I mean, you look around, we've sort of lost touch with that idea.
It's funny because in watching the show, especially now, I mean, I saw it last week before things really blew up. There's probably no better time for a show like this than now.
I mean, there's just so much messaging that we are in opposition to one another, that we are on sides. And
more importantly, not paying attention to each other.
That's right.
Because the documentary explicitly touches on something that the show deals with implicitly, which is kind of we're all collaterals of the human sort of potential movement of the 70s, which taught everybody to be selfish.
Yeah, right.
and there's a lot of dialogue that sort of trades in that kind of stuff in peripheral ways and in subtle ways throughout the show. But it's also about your character and this group you become a part of waking yourselves up.
I tried to create four just totally opposing characters aesthetically, and then slowly over these episodes, break down those walls until we realize that we are all so much more similar than we realize. We all want the same thing, which is just someone to say like, hey, I'm in this with you. You know, I think that's what the show is about. We're all in this together.
I have to ask you, because there's a phrase that's repeated a few times, turn to your right.
Yeah, it's interesting.
But it's also, it happens a couple of times where things go dark and then turn to your right. It's like almost like a reorienting exercise where just don't pay attention to what's in front of you. Look around.
Yeah.
Close your eyes to what's there and then look around and see what you're not looking at.
Yeah. Hey, you really got it, man. You got the show.
Well, apparently I watched it, which shocked some people. But I just felt I couldn't stop with it because tonally, each episode is different than when they came before.
Yes.
But in a subtle way. So by the time you get to 8, you realize it's departed from where the show started in a complete way, but not so much by episode 2. So I want to talk to you about structuring that thing to where each episode is slightly different than what came before. So I'm guessing by the end, we'll be in a completely different place.
Yes. Well, they all rhyme. And I think that the way that it is structured is very much like The Wizard of Oz. The first 4 episodes are each of those characters' songs. This guy needs a brain. This guy needs a heart. This one needs courage. This one needs to get home. And all of those episodes, by the time you finish the first 4, you should feel like, I know what each of these people needs. And then the rest is this journey to find this missing girl, might as well be Oz. If we find Clara, she will have the answer to all of our problems. And then as you would expect, as with any promise like that, so the metaphor of life, Clara's not going to do it for you. You know, so what have I learned? What have I learned along the way? What have we learned together? You know, probably that it was there all along, somewhere in the space between all of us. And so that's how it's structured. And I say that without giving away any of the story, but it's a pretty classic tale, you know?
It's funny you say not giving away any of the story, because I don't know how you give away any of the story, because it's such a dense and a dense twist.
Yes. I wanted the show to be fun. You know, I wanted to explore all of these things. Some of these are weighty subjects. Some of them are designed to make you really think and consider. But I also wanted the show to be a blast. And so it's a really fun adventure. And we had an amazing group of writers who, one of them said to me, I had gotten embarrassed of saying that I wanted to write about something. And I really related to that. There's this great documentary, another great documentary called Beauty is Embarrassing, where you realize that when you're trying to make something you think is actually about something or beautiful or even, dare I say, art, you are then up against this really embarrassing feeling of, can I place this on this mountain of art that's inspired me from Rembrandt to Stanley Kubrick to all these people, you know, to Leonard Cohen? Like, can I put my little show on this pile?
Hold that thought. There's plenty to talk about. Clearly, my guest, our friend Jason Siegel. His new show on AMC is Dispatches from Elsewhere. The title means a lot. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? Critics rave The Greatest Hits is a music-infused romance that hits all the right notes and the most original time travel story in years. Featuring music by Nelly Furtado, Beach House, Jamie XX, and more. Watch The Greatest Hits, now streaming on Hulu.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
I'm out of breath. Welcome back. It's The Treatment. Still sitting here with Jason Segel. We're talking about his terrific new show on AMC, Dispatch from Elsewhere. We're talking about Beauty is Embarrassing and just offering this piece up. But in addition to that mountain of art you're talking about, you're also talking about a mountain now of content.
Yes.
So you're afraid to put up against things that you don't want to be judged against, or you do want to be judged, juxtaposed to, but also that mountain of things that's just there.
Yeah, you know what? I actually am not too concerned about the mountain of content, because the only concern I have, which I wouldn't even call a concern because frankly this part isn't really my job, is that it breaks through and people see it. I would love for people to see the show amidst all of these other shows that exist.
Well, that's here so my listener can, you know, eventually find it.
Well,
I hope he's listening.
Yeah. But beyond that, I think that... Look, maybe you're delusional, but you have to believe that what you're saying, that what you work 3, 4, 5 years to create is worth people watching. And if you're wrong, then it turns out you maybe shouldn't be doing this job. Or maybe you're right and the thing means something to people. But I think everyone involved on this show really believed that we are making something special and maybe valuable for this moment we're in right now.
So much to talk about as you're saying these things. So one of the things I thought about in this is that it's about, you know, the value of found art, which is what the documentary is getting at, even with that opening, which is about all those street signs and things coming to life. But also I was asking you about Philadelphia because having spent time there, it's a city I think that people have woefully underestimated, because it's a city like San Francisco that's full of public art.
Yes.
That you can just look around and see art everywhere. People have kind of made these buildings, not just neighborhoods, but buildings and curbs, into their own possessions and their own canvases.
Listen, it's the perfect metaphor for the show. It's known Philadelphia as like this underdog city, and it's always filmed in this sort of gray, blue, Rocky movie grit.
Like working class concrete.
Yes, or it's filmed to be another city. You know, it's like you're shooting in Philadelphia for New York or something like that. You walk down the streets in Philadelphia, and there are more murals, I believe, than any other city in the country. They have an amazing mural arts program. You turn down any alley that you might pass by on your normal commute, and it might be complete tiled mosaic. And that, to me, was the metaphor of the show.
And then around a corner where there's all cobblestone. I mean,
it's... Yes. Beauty is all around you. Sometimes it takes a different route to work. Or just turning that alley that you normally pass by.
Close your eyes and turn to your right.
Yeah, that's it. Right, exactly. It's just so easy to feel stuck.
One of the reasons I thought you chose Philadelphia, you were telling me, is partially because of expediency, but I also thought, too, because 12 Monkeys was shot there.
It wasn't because 12 Monkeys was shot there, but I think that there is a sense there of mischievousness. Mischievousness?
Mischievous.
Yeah. That I like. I've always had that. You know, from Goonies to Labyrinth to every Tim Burton movie I ever saw.
Also, it's a city where the alleys and buildings, it feels like a city of hallways. Yes. It's like a kind of an Escher painting almost.
Yeah.
And so many of the visual tableau in Dispatches are hallways.
Yes. I was doing so much thinking about the show the past couple days because I'm having really, honestly, the pleasure of getting to watch the episodes now completed where they're out of my hands. I can't touch them anymore. Can't fix them. And so now you just watch. There is so much metaphor in the show about becoming, starting on one side of something and ending up on the other side of it.
I like the playful take on the opening of the first episode in the 8th episode. I mean, by then you're actually can actually make fun of what the show was doing and also make fun of the idea that now that people think that every show is going to be about some kind of horrific conspiracy.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, the show doesn't take itself all that seriously. I take the themes. We all take the themes very, very seriously.
The show does, I mean, initially, because you've got to, it's got to seduce a little bit.
Yeah.
And it feels like to me almost you have to use the darkness to win people over to walk them into a lighter sphere.
Yeah. And I also think that as with any journey of transition, the beginning's dark. That's the only reason generally that we change. That's my experience, is that you begin in a place that you realize is no longer tolerable. Rock bottom. You know what I mean? I think it really does take a rock bottom to want to move to a lighter existence.
That's so interesting, just because I feel like that's also, in terms of the look of the show, I thought about Wizard of Oz, just because the first episode was basically almost black and white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Each of the episodes at the beginning is sort of meant to be from the perspective of the character we're profiling. So in episode one, we see the world how I see the world, how Peter sees the world. Episode two is a little bit more like Amelie. It's how Eve Lindley, Simone, sees the world, and she's amazing in it.
Episode four is it starts with animation.
Yeah. Yeah. Episode three starts with animation. Yeah. Yep. Episode four is the Andre Benjamin episode, who emerges in this show as a truly breathtaking actor.
Because you know what he does in this? Which everybody does, but he really does this in the way he hadn't before. He takes his time in the performance.
He sure does. Yes. I don't want to speak out of turn for Andre, but I think he and I have a lot more in common than we realized going in. But
how do you mean?
He and I are both on a journey to figure out what to do now. You know, he was obviously much more successful in his younger years than I was, but we both had this experience of, oh, okay, this is the thing they told us to do. Like, okay, now I feel great, right? And then that's not, you know, this may just be me, but it's not, I don't believe it is just me. It's not how I felt. It didn't feel great. And I know that Andre has dealt, he talked openly about it, has dealt with some, what am I supposed to do now feelings. And man, we explore it in the show hard.
You know, it's the line I've quoted on the show before, but you know, it's that old line from Kierkegaard, the closer you get to a dream, the more tattered and dusty it becomes.
Wow. Yeah. Beautiful.
But that's kind of it. You know, you're told that this, or that line, I think supposed to be from Faust, but I'm not sure. Beware the things you want, for you shall have them.
Yeah. I think, honestly, Clara is this destination, is sort of
meant to... And she's part real and part art. I mean, that's in visual terms, she's exactly what she's supposed to be, isn't she?
Yes. It's so beautiful as a destination. Only to find out any of these things that it's not there. You know, it's this illusion, and it maybe was a really helpful pursuit when you were first getting started, but then you're going to have to come to terms with this other realization that it's about the people around you. You know, you're not going to get someplace except death eventually.
Wow, there's a happy note. It's well, a treatment.
No, I mean, it just goes. It just goes on and on and on and on, you know?
But if you've got your eyes open to it, which is what the show and the documentary and that installation was trying to do is to say, lift your head up for a minute. Look, I hate to go back to that, but look to the right.
Man, you're missing it. You know, it's like my girlfriend, really amazing woman, said to me at one point, which I put right into the show. I was going to Sundance for a movie, and I tend to think of all these things as a test, as opposed to something that I'm there to enjoy. And she said to me, she took me by the shoulders, and she said, "Be sure to enjoy every minute of this. You can't post-enjoy things." And it's really true. Like, when you film a concert on your iPhone, you're missing it, man. Like, you're not going to go home and watch the concert on your iPhone. And by the way, that's not as good as watching the concert when it's happening. And I think that it's just so true of life. Some idea that, you know, I'm going to document it to then enjoy at some future point. Man, what a bummer. I did that for a long time.
Yeah?
I think so. Yeah, I think there was a lot of... feeling like I was on the treadmill trying to get to Clara instead of realizing like, oh, it's happening right now. I'm in the middle of it.
We're talking about Destination with, I guess, our old friend Jason Segel. His new show on AMC is Dispatches from Elsewhere is The Treatment. What's funny, because I also thought about Clara, too, as being kind of a reset in the show, because that tableau is the Wizard of Oz again right in front of us.
Yeah.
And that happens a few times in the show, kind of a reset, doesn't it?
Yeah, just like life. I think the show's a lot like life, in that at the beginning, especially of our series, you're just born. You're just in it. You don't know what the point is. No one tells you what the goal is. No one tells you what's supposed to happen. There's all this stuff happening around
you. I have to ask you, as you're talking about this, what was the reaction at AMC when you wrote an opening that basically says, oh, the kind of stuff we usually do, we tell you who this guy is and what is, we're not going to do that. And in fact, you know, we do get backstory. When we do get it, it sort of comes as texture rather than exposition. What was the reaction to that? Because it's an unusual way to explore character.
You know what? AMC was so brave regarding this show and so trusting and so supportive. I'm not just saying that because they, you know, I'm working with them. They really believed in me and they really believed in the show and they really believed in the themes of the show. And I think, again, not to speak out of turn for AMC, but I think they were at a moment of asking themselves, what do we want to say? And I think there's something about this show that's saying something of value. Like, hey, everyone, life is better than this.
But part of this, too, and we've talked about this the last time you're here, there's a big part of you that's kind of a contrarian, that whatever the prevailing message is, you feel you have to respond to that. Did it just take you a while to figure out how you wanted to respond to that, in addition to the kind of sort of crises that you're having in your own life? We talked about this, but what you do as an actor, as a writer, is not comment, but respond.
Yeah.
And this feels like to me a response in the same way Forgetting Sarah Marshall did and some of the other things we talked about. Even that performance in the End of the Tour feels like a response.
Yeah. So you work really, really hard just to get your foot in the door at the beginning, right? I'll do anything, you know. And then I got on a train that was moving pretty fast of my own making, where I had a big success and I got on a TV show that was a big success. And then the next thing you know, you don't have to do much thinking. When it became time for me to create from scratch again, I was really unsure what the point of any of it is, except to make a bunch of money, which I had made a bunch of money. And so I really couldn't sit on that as my like operating motive anymore. And so I started asking people I admire, what do you call art? Why do you choose a project? What's the point? And I got to work with some really amazing people. I got to work with Mr. Robert Redford. I got to work with Chiwetel Ejiofor, Rooney Mara, all these people I really admire. And I would ask them these questions. Jesse Eisenberg, people who take it seriously and choose really carefully. And it was Chiwetel Ejiofor who said to me that art is an act of self-exploration on behalf of an audience. And I thought it was such, I mean, I had never thought in those terms before, but I realized that maybe that's a really great model of like, as a writer, as an actor, as a filmmaker, whatever, I will act as a surrogate and say, for the next hour or 10 hours, I am you. And I'll explore this on behalf of us. And so that is actually the first four episodes you start with, they are you, they are you, they are you. And I actually continue it throughout the whole series. That's where that idea came from. Like for the next storytelling segment, think of me as you.
Well, I'm going to encourage people to do that and watch Dispatches from Elsewhere. I'm sorry we're out of time. It's always so good to see you, Jason.
Yeah, thanks. You too, man. What a great talk. Thanks.
Well, my pleasure. Our recording engineer here at KCRW is Mario Diaz. The show is mixed and edited by Kat Yore. I am not going to give you 20 minutes of your life back. It's The Treatment. To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.